Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
I ran the numbers again for the cheapest ESG ETF portfolio. These are good numbers. They're not marijuana good, but they're pretty good. If you believe that it's going to save you in the apocalypse, you might want to consider something else.
Laura, great having you back on the podcast. Are you dealing with this, what do you call it, a double tropical storm or hurricane situation right now?
I mean, two hurricanes in 1 week. This is peak 2020, I hope. I'll take that back, because you know the moment I say that, something else is going to come by. It's going to be murder bees again with the hurricanes for the next time. I don't know. It's going to be 2020 is going to try and top itself.
I did think of you. It's so on brand for 2020. It's perfect. But we'll stay safe. Okay, so we are nearly into September. And I would say still probably the biggest story in ETFs this year is the United States Oil Fund, USO. And we got some news last week, which we'll get into in a moment. Now, for anyone who hasn't followed this story, quick shameless plug, I highly recommend listening to the podcast that Laura, you and I did back on April 28th. We did a full deep dive into why USO has been such a big story. Definitely check that out if you want to get into the details. That said, I'm going to try to give a quick rundown just to catch everyone up, and then we'll get to the news from last week. So the long story short is there was significant turmoil in the oil market earlier this year. We even saw oil futures go negative by $37, $38 a barrel. And the reason was simply too much supply and not enough demand. That demand diminished primarily because of the coronavirus shutdown. And there were also some geopolitical factors out there too. But oil demand fell. There was too much supply. So that caused oil prices to tank. And this disruption in the oil market caused some problems for USO. So prior to all this happening, USO held front month oil futures contracts, and it simply rolled them over every month. Pretty straightforward. But with all the turmoil and then actually investors trying to play a rebound in oil, that caused USO to get too big. And so the Commodity Futures Trading Commission ended up slapping some limits on the amount of monthly futures USO could hold. And then you add in these wild price moves in oil. And what happened was USO began adjusting their fund strategy on the fly. They started owning a bunch of different futures, not just front month. And so now here we are. Is that a pretty good summary? Anything you would add to that before we move on?
Right, sure. So first of all, I have to be pedantic here and say that the CFTC didn't slap the position limits on USO. These position limits are in place for any ETF, for any individual investor would run up against these limits in the same way that USO did. The other thing I wanted to add was that just the sheer volume of changes that USO made within a very short period of time. USO had made something like 6 or 8 changes to its portfolio to broaden out its exposure across that futures curve. Like you said, I was joking with another reporter that there was a week or so where it felt like USO was filing for another change every day and was going to give us a drinking problem. So it was the end state, though, is that USO ended up as effectively an actively managed ETF, with their managers allowing themselves the discretion to invest in any futures contract in any month, in any amount, not in oil at all, without any further disclosure to investors. They didn't have to say anything else about what they were doing. So that's where we ended up.
Yeah, there was a reverse share split, right? They also suspended creations of new shares because they hit the max number they could issue. So USO was trading at a premium for a while. Okay, so last week, the SEC sent what's called a Wells notice to USO, the ETF itself. They sent it to the United States Commodity Funds, the issuer of the ETF, and then its CEO. Do you want to explain what a Wells notice is? And then walk us through what was in this.
Sure. So a Wells notice is essentially a letter that the SEC or some other regulatory body sends, basically informing the recipient that there are charges coming. So in this particular notice, the SEC indicated that they were recommending enforcement action against USO, USCF, and the CEO for these portfolio disclosures that we were talking about, whether it was one particular disclosure or all of them or the end state that tipped them over. They didn't really say, but I imagine we're going to find out, you know, the full details later. In the notice, and this is what really raised my eyebrows, The SEC cited a few specific clauses of securities law, and all of them deal with securities fraud. So without trying to like go into chapter and verse here, essentially they cited a statute that criminalizes defrauding people when you're trading securities, another one when you're trading securities on an exchange, and this one's interesting, one that criminalizes omitting info or making false statements to investors. Usually it's the one that's cited in insider trading cases. So in other words, the SEC clearly thinks that USO and its managers tried to pull one over on investors with these portfolio disclosures.
So what happens next then? Because the CTF is still out there trading. It has like $4.5 billion invested in it. And last I checked, I think we need to mention it's up about 80% since oil bottomed in late April. Is there any risk to this fund? Because as you walk through that, I mean, fraud, that's about as bad as it gets in the investment world.
Yeah, right. There's risks for sure. The letter, however, itself, the Wells notice isn't a notice of formal charges being made. It's kind of the first step. The SEC has to actually go to the people who can make the enforcement decisions. It's a recommendation, basically. But it is a big warning sign that things are about to get ugly. And so the next step is for those charges to be filed, right? But first, the USCF, John Love, and so on, they have the opportunity to respond to the Wells notice. They get the chance to write a statement and explain themselves and maybe talk them down from charges. And that's exactly what the filing that was made announcing this, that's what they said they were going to do. So one interesting point is that investors themselves do not seem to be deterred by any of this drama. In fact, they appear to be encouraged by it, because I saw a headline from Catherine Greenfield over at Bloomberg that USO had its best day of inflows in months on the day that it got the Wells notice, which I swear it's giving me gray hair, Nate.
But shouldn't that tell us something? Because I guess on one hand, there aren't many good options for investors to access the price of oil in a manner that they can, like they can with USO through an ETF. But on the other hand, if you have larger institutional investors putting money to work in this fund, which I presume that's some of these assets coming in, it's not all Robinhood or retail investors, I would have to think that those institutional investors have thought through the risks here and vetted the pros and cons and decided, hey, this is okay to do. I mean, should that give some confidence around maybe the outcome of this situation overall?
I don't know. And I would push back on the idea that this is, some blend of retail and institutional money here. It probably is for sure that there are some institutions here. But if they are, if you have institutions that are trying to access the price of oil, they have other options besides going to an ETF that is not doing what it said it was going to do on the tin, 6 months ago. They have other options for investing in oil altogether than just a front month futures strategy, which, as we've covered in the past, is not necessarily the best way for a buy and hold strategy in playing the energy markets to start with. So I don't have the numbers with me right this second, but my instinct says that a lot of this is speculative interest. A lot of this is retail interest. And, I don't know if this is going to work out well for anybody. The question, you hear me, right? Like I'm very, I will say this. I am interested to see where this goes next, right? I don't even want to make a prediction, because that's how bad my predictions have been about USO. So
no, I hear you. And again, we should reiterate that this Wells notice, I mean, it's a letter informing of impending charges. The formal charges have not been submitted yet, and we don't know what the outcome of this will be. And I'm kind of like you. I mean, I'm at a loss of words, because I've read through a lot of the prospectus, and I do feel like a lot of the leeway that USO took, I feel like a lot of that was laid out in the prospectus. And I try to think through who was wronged here. Was it people who As the fund strategy changed, they felt like they did not get enough juice, per se, as oil spiked. Was it short sellers who would have liked to have seen this product implode? And so as the fund strategy shifted, maybe that prevented that from happening. And so there are a lot of layers to this. I guess one thing I come back to, USO was constantly shifting their strategy over the course of a month or two. And I remember I may have even asked you whether this ETF should just be shut down. And I'm no regulatory buff, but if the SEC thinks there's fraud or some other major issues here, why do they let this ETF continue to trade?
That's a really good question. And part of it is that the SEC themselves can't really do anything. Like I said, they have that enforcement arm that they've got to refer things to and so on. The second thing is that they just want to, they're a due diligence agency, right? They like the chain of command. They want to make sure they're dotting their I's and crossing their T's before taking on that step of, you can't just, I guess, blaze in with guns or charge in with guns blazing, right? And shut down a fund. They're not some like cop 2 weeks from retirement here, right? So we have seen them in the past be reticent to charge people or funds in other cases where there was much clearer evidence of bad faith changes. I am thinking specifically of what happened with the index change for MJ, the marijuana fund. You know, ETFMG didn't get charged with anything, even though you could make a stronger case that what they did with the index swap was not very friendly to investors in the original Latin American real estate fund. But what did happen is that the SEC made it harder for ETFs going forward to just willy-nilly change their indexes from one segment to another one. I've spoken with issuers after that happened. They've said they've had a lot more trouble doing that. So I imagine we're going to see, at the very least, something similar happen here. At the very least, what happened with USO, being able to just willy-nilly change your portfolio from a passive front month fund to active management in the span of 6 weeks, that's not going to be allowed to happen again anytime soon.
That said, if I was mounting USO's defense, look, nobody expected oil to trade at negative 37 bucks a barrel. I don't think most people were predicting a global pandemic. And so I do think it's possible to say, hey, look, these were extraordinary times in market conditions. This isn't fraud. We were trying to react in real time to, I know everybody hates this word, this unprecedented situation.
Yeah, and they had those position limits. I'm sorry to interrupt, but they did have those position limits to run up against. So, you know, they can satisfy one regulatory agency and anger another one, but they do have a strong case.
All right. I want to move on to these two other items on the SEC's plate. They have been pretty busy recently. And these other two initiatives, I would say one is more geared towards retail investors, and then the other is more geared towards larger institutional investors, but both could impact ETF issuers. The first one is, in early August, the SEC announced a proposal to essentially require mutual funds and ETFs to make their disclosures more retail-friendly, right? More digestible. And this does sort of tie into USO. Maybe this could have helped some of those retail investors. I know you've dug into this proposal. What do you think? Do you see anything here that could really make a difference?
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting proposal. Basically, you know, when you invest in a fund, you get a prospectus from it annually. You get annual and semi-annual shareholder reports. You get statements of additional information. You just get all this paperwork. And all of these legal documents are super long. Like, we're talking hundreds of pages sometimes. And everything that you could think of, plus the kitchen sink, is thrown in as a disclosure. For, you know, retail investors, for mom and pop investors, it's maybe not the most efficient or best content delivery vehicle mechanism, because, you know, they don't care about all of these details about how creation redemption happens and so on. So there's a number of things that are being proposed to be taken out of the prospectus and be put into other legal documentation like financial statements and so on. The SEC would also require more graphics like tables and text features like bullet lists and Q&As and so on to make it more scannable and more readable. They're also, and this is the biggest one in my opinion, they're going to simplify the fee table, which makes it easier to understand the fees when you're paying or that you're paying when you owe these funds. You know, they're going to revise how risks are reported and list them according to, you know, some hierarchy that's indicating which risks are principal to the fund and which aren't. And you can't just list them in alphabetical order anymore. You've got to put like some emphasis on which goes where. And so that one we can get to a little bit more if you want, but that's the broad strokes of the proposal. And overwhelmingly, I think this proposal sort of slid under the attention of a lot of people. I'm honestly a little skeptical of it. I'm always skeptical when the government tells me that it wants me to know less information and adds in more steps for me to get that information, no matter what the information might be. And in fact, as a journalist, I've actually used prospectuses in their current form in many stories, you know, all the disclosures and the risks, the list of risks and, you know, all of this stuff. I've used financial statements to track, you know, what money is going where in a fund before. So, like, I get why this is going away or why they would like this to go away for retail investors. But I honestly don't think that this lack of transparency is going to be as helpful as it seems on the face. I don't see that there's a pressing need for it. Is this going to make retail investors understand their investments better? I mean, maybe, but, you know, one, retail investors are only one corner of the market. And two, you've got to actually get retail investors to open up the prospectus and read it first. And that is the real crux of the problem, not necessarily, you know, what's inside of it. So it's just getting people to open the document in the first place.
No, I completely agree. And if you look at the proposal, the SEC was saying that they're trying to promote more effective communication to help Main Street investors. And I do think that's a good goal. That's a good endeavor. But to your point, I think more of an emphasis needs to be put on how do we actually get investors to take a look at this stuff? Or is there a better format to get this information to them? Okay, Laura, 2 minutes left. We always run out of time, which I love when you're on the podcast. But I also want to ask you about another SEC proposal. This was from July, I believe. And what the SEC is proposing is raising the asset threshold for institutional investors to file what's called a Form 13F, which all this is investment managers with over $100 million in assets, they have to formally disclose their equity holdings. And the SEC is proposing raising that $100 million threshold to $3.5 billion. They haven't changed this since 1975. Now, the potential ETF impact is that ETF issuers tend to use this 13F data to figure out who's investing in their products because they can't see this elsewhere. And so raising this threshold to $3.5 billion, I think some are concerned that's going to reduce visibility here. Do you see this as an issue?
Oh, I absolutely see this as an issue. So yeah, the SEC is arguing that they are reducing the burden on smaller managers to file these things quarterly. I don't really think that there's too many people who feel that filing a 13F is this huge, unsurmountable burden, but, you know, I'm not inside every office in America. The other big argument is that the SEC calls out front-running and copycatting, which honestly is ridiculous on its face because 13Fs are published on a 45-day lag, and a lot happens in 45 days. So, you know, there are some ETFs that do use 13Fs to inform their strategies. There are some investors who use it too. But, you know, if they were reading 13F filings, they weren't going to invest in your active strategy anyway, you know. So to me, like you said, the downsides here are that companies, ETF companies, use 13F filings to understand who's buying their shares. I saw one estimate that said that small cap and micro cap firms could lose up to a fifth of the visibility into their share ownership if this threshold is raised. So, you know, I believe that there are a few fundamental truths of investing, and one of them is that transparency is a good thing. I honestly believe that. You don't have to take advantage of the transparency, but the more information is available, the more you democratize finance and the better your outcomes are going to be across the board. So I am very, very skeptical of a proposal that would significantly constrict transparency for investors. And I'm not alone. There are hundreds, thousands of comments on this proposal basically saying the same thing. You know, there's been some good suggestions on how to increase the transparency, shortening the reporting lag, or increase reporting of what types of investments people are investing in. And in my opinion, they're right. Like, the SEC should be focusing on that, not making it harder to find data.
On both of these SEC proposals we talked about, have they already been published to the SEC's website and in the Federal Register? You mentioned the comments. I know there's always a 60-day public comment period. Where do these stand?
Yes, they are both in the Federal Register. I want to say the 13F one is coming due at the end of September. And that would mean that the other one, the disclosure one, I think is going to be due at the end of the month. I'm sorry, you asked me a tough question and I don't have the dates right.
That sounds right, because the first one we covered, I think, was proposed in August, so it's probably about a month behind. Yeah. Well, Laura, great stuff this week. Stay safe with the double tropical storms or hurricanes, and look forward to chatting again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was ETF.com's Laura Krieger.